Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout. Hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. When you think that things can't get much worse, in a second, oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying,
always saying what you cannot do. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Welcome to American Sovereignty Radio with Scott Osborne and Jennifer Montrose. Yours truly, Dan Wilson and Gary Rummer. As we start our show, I was listening to Fox News the other day, and they were saying that ISIS was about to fall in Mosul. And what were we going to do once we got Iraq back? And they're talking about pulling our troops back out like we did last time. Or they were talking about staying on. And my stance is, we have to essentially place an occupying force. Why? Take a walk back through history. ancient Greece, ancient Rome. How do you think they conquered their territories? Because once they beat the enemy, they kept the people there. To reestablish the government, secure the borders, and then to rebuild what they had destroyed. Every time we have not done that, we've ended up paying for it. The reason why Germany and Japan are allies is because we left tens of thousands of troops in both areas. We secured their borders. We helped them rebuild their infrastructure, while diplomats helped them create a stable government. And we still have bases in both places. Now, if we want to stabilize the Middle East, Iraq is pretty well located. And what we need to do is secure the border between Iraq and Iran. We need to ensure we have enough MPs and things to keep everything under control. And we need to rebuild their infrastructure, or help them rebuild it, I should say. Use their labor, and we have the Army Corps of Engineers telling them how to do it, while diplomats try to figure out the problem up top and try to come up with a settlement. But by us investing that time and effort, and it may take another 10 or 15 years, more than likely it will. So we got to be willing to commit for the long term. And once we do that, now, we take Russia out of the game, we take Iran out of the game, and we have more control over Syria. And we can allow or encourage Syria and Iraq to rejoin like they once were a few thousand years ago. And even throw in Libya and make it as it was supposed to be, not the way the Europeans split things up, 500 years ago. If you allow things to go to their natural form, then you'll have a lot fewer problems. But we need to oversee the whole thing, so it doesn't break out into a crazy war. And once it's overseen, then we just leave a presence. So with that, I'm going to pass it to my co-host, Gary Rummer, up in North Dakota. How is it up there, Gary?
Oh, it's not too bad. It started out pretty cold there this morning. excuse me. I was doing some hauling today with a truck, and so I'm a little out of the loop with this Iraq thing. But, yeah, it's doing good. I celebrated my birthday today. I went out for supper tonight, and I just got home a while ago, probably an hour before the show started. So, but anyway, I agree with you, Dan, on this. If we get out, if we move out too quickly, a lot of times the enemies will just come right back in, and then they'll make it a lot worse, because then they start to punish people that supported the war, supported that wanted their freedom, And anytime they, that's just the way terrorists work, or enemies work. I call them all terrorists, because they use terror to get their way, But, yeah, you're right. You have to sit there and rebuild their infrastructure. You got to actually secure the borders and do all that stuff, and then you got to rebuild, and that can take 20 years easily. And plus, you got to make sure there's no holdovers, no enemy holdovers that can cause some havoc, you know. I mean, that's another thing. You got to protect the people and stuff. And that's probably where, you know, the Second Amendment comes in with us, you know, because that's the purpose we have it too. You know, we have a Second Amendment so we can protect ourselves in case some hostile enemy ever comes in. There's some means of protection there. And so you're exactly right. You know, when you win a war, the first thing with victory is you got to make the enemy unable to hurt you. That's the definition of victory. Then you have an exit plan, you know, after that. After you get done with everything, then you have your exit plan. Now, like I said, this isn't an overnight process. So I'll turn that back to you, Dan.
Right. And the last time when Obama pulled out and left Iraq to its own devices, what did we get in return? ISIS. And if we do it again, we'll just have another one, another terrorist group, whether it's ISIS or the Taliban or whatever else. A terrorist organization is always looking for a place, a void, where they can build and establish a power base. We can't make that mistake again. People think by leaving over troops, we're trying to take and put America in there. No, we're trying to stabilize it. Because we need to stabilize it so they can create their own form of government, as long as it's not communist or something like that. Their own free form of government, and then with their help, we clean up the mess. I mean, anytime you go into combat, I mean, look at what we did to Germany. We leveled it. Look at what we did to Japan. We leveled that, too. So how is the country supposed to rebuild itself when its economy is gone? It has no way to rebuild itself. So the void gets filled in by terrorists. And we saw that in Vietnam. What happened? The communists took over the whole country within weeks. First Gulf War, Iraq was back up and running within weeks, within a few months. We never changed anything. We got them out of Kuwait. But that's it. If we're going to stabilize our region, we got to add a permanent presence there. And we got to tell Putin, no, you and Iran aren't going to take Iraq over. Sorry, ain't going to happen. Because that's what's going through both of their heads. That's why we need enough troops there to act as a deterrent. Russia doesn't have the money to carry on for any period of time in a war. Iran can't pull it off either, because all we'd do is we'd attack Iran at the same time while keeping troops in Iraq. And they know it. So we got the cards, the best cards. And we got to bring in enough troops in there to make it right. They don't want to mess with us. And that includes aircraft for close-in air support, like the A-10s. We need the Apaches. We need fighter squadrons. I mean, we need the whole kit and caboodle on top of construction equipment and all the supplies necessary and the diplomatic force to try to get things settled for who's going to be the leader. And it's the only way we're going to get this Middle East problem out of our hair. And if we keep the troops there and put enough of them there, we're going to stay out of a war. The best way to avoid a war is to come in with a bigger bat. It's real simple. And you come in there with strong enough force to say, don't bother with us. Then they won't. So, I mean, that's not really our only choice. And I think General Mattis understands that. I'm a creature of history. And all you have to do is you can go back 4,000 years. And the way the winner won was through occupation. It wasn't just defeat them on the battlefield. That's only the beginning. Then you gain the people's confidence. You work with them. You let them know that you aren't there to take over. You're there to help. So, you know, you need groups coming in there to help feed the people, get the people back to work. Best way to win over a enemy is to put food in their belly and give them a job. Pretty simple. And make them, you know, regain their pride. And what's the best way to get somebody proud is when they go to work, at the end of the week, they get a paycheck, and they can pay for their food, and they can take care of their families. It's real simple. You know. And with that, I'll pass it back over to you.
Well, exactly right. You know, what we need to be doing is spreading what works here. Freedom, you know. That's what works is freedom, you know. And you're exactly, you hit the nail on the head. That's what we need to teach these people, that tyranny always fails. Socialism always fails. And I get sick and tired of people that go out there and somehow claim that socialism will work if we just give it time, or we just tweak it a little bit, or we do this or the other. What, you know, it just doesn't, you know, it never works. One thing socialism does that doesn't written down on paper is that it's dispiriting. And when people are dispirited and, you know, let's just say the morale is gone, what happens then is that they just give up. Why work if you can't keep your earnings, or you can't keep your, you know, you can't, let's just say, keep your pride, you know. And what we need to do, and it worked here for over 200 years, well over 200 years, is to spread freedom. That's the best thing you can spread out. As you can't spread the wealth, we spread freedom and make sure people understand what works. You got, then you'll have to worry about living life in fear, where you go to jail if you say something you're not supposed to say. If you go to other countries, like I said, you can't say anything. They're so scared that something might happen to one of them, or even worse, one of their family members. So, I mean, with people who are tyrants, what tyrants will do, if they can't get to the person, they'll go after their family, you know. See, there is no morals. See, we got to, that's another thing, reestablish morals back and tell them why it's worked so well here. See, and that's part of establishing a society, you know. And it's these things, like I said, they're not overnight processes, because, like I said, the people are so used to living in a fearful domain that it's just going to take time to show what really works. You know, where you said, Dan, you know, at the end of the week, they got a paycheck where they can purchase their own food, they can feed their family, and they have total independence. And they don't have to depend on the government or some tyrant to take care of them. You know, tyrants love to tell their people, we can take care of you. But they really, in essence, they control you, and a lot of times people starve to death. Yeah, they give you just a little bit of food. You know, look at Cuba, it's a prime example. You know, I mean, this is where, you know, look at socialism there, or communism really is what it is. Look at what happens there. People are starving to death. I don't think we could fathom living that way here. Well, over in Iraq, that's what we got to teach, is that we got to teach that freedom is the only thing that works. And over time, you know, like I said, you start at the bottom and work up. And these things will take a long time to teach, and plus teach the people to be able to defend themselves. You know, that's the one thing that's very important, because with tyrants and terrorists and stuff like that, if they live by the gun, then they're going to have to die by the gun. I think there's a quote there in the Bible where it says something similar about a sword. You know, if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. That's what they mean. If they're out there going to terrorize people, well, they're going to die by the same weapons that they use against us. And with that, I'm going to turn this right back over to you there, Dan.
No, I agree. Especially with Sharia law, where you're not only being dominated by a tyrannical government, but you're also dealing with a group of people who believe in honor killing, killing women, stoning them to death. I mean, you got to start from scratch with this group, and it's not going to be an easy task. But, you know, through a generation or two, you can stabilize it. It can be done. And I did forget to do one thing. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Thanks,
happy
Dan.
Birthday, dear Gary. Happy birthday to you. How did it feel to be 21 again?
I stopped calling you at 29 a long time ago, so it feels pretty good. I don't feel any older than I did yesterday, so.
Well, we got a cold front go through, so my knees are bothering me, but, and it's probably why I'm a little horsey today.
Yeah, I'm a little hoarse too, and I got to get up tomorrow morning. I was going to, you know, I didn't know I had to work, you know, and when I got up this morning, I was going to do my normal process, you know, working, doing a few things around the house, and, well, my boss called me and said, can you come in today? And I said, yeah, I can come in. I can. He said, well, we got some corn to haul, and he said, we got to pick up some fertilizer. So he sent me down to get to unload a load of corn, and then I had to run over and pick up a load of fertilizer and bring it home, and I got to do that same thing tomorrow. So, but anyway, it's a paycheck, so, you know. But,
fertilizer time, huh?
Well, we're just getting it around the place there. You know, he's putting it in a bin, fertilizer, but just getting it all around so it's something less to
ready
do
to go.
When you get ready to
right.
go. That's right. So, but I got to get up about 5 tomorrow morning and get ready to go. So.
Well, I mean, I understand that, and I got a bunch of articles to write, but. What are you going to do? Life in the fast lane. And some of our fast lanes in a Model T, so we don't get over 25. After that, it's too fast. But it's like they were talking about it, and it's like right now, you can't rely on NATO. You definitely can't rely on the UN. Russia and Iran will complain like hell. And all we have to say is come and get it. And both of them will back down. Because, yeah, even though our military is depleted, we're still darn strong. We still can pack a heavy punch. You know, I mean, and that will just really add more reason why we have to build up our military quick. Because the faster we build up the military, the better chance we can avoid a war. I mean, exactly. If we mess this one up, you're talking World War III.
Yeah, I don't even want to think about World War III. It's just a horrible thought.
Because some moron's going to start throwing nukes. And don't even want to go there. This way, bringing in a lot of troops, throwing in the Army, throwing in the Marines, and saying, okay. And then start recruiting, I mean, personally, to rebuild our numbers, for activating the draft again. For maybe, you know, a year or two, just to get our numbers up again. You know, I know people are not for that, and the liberals will have a cow, but maybe we'll teach the darn college kids that no, you can't have your nap time with your blanket. You know, here's reality. You know, throw them in the military for a few years. Let them learn what reality is.
Mm-hmm. And sacrifice, real sacrifice.
Exactly. Now, they don't have to go to war to learn that. But they do have to go out there to learn how to be able to act like adults. Because the crap I'm seeing going on in colleges today is a joke. You know, they're timeout places. You can't say certain things. Yeah, put them in the Marine Corps and let them hear a few things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, it's time to put their Play-Doh away. And start working and become either a man or a woman. Not pretend like they're little kids yet and play the whole time, you know.
Yeah, it ain't gonna happen. So, you know, I think it would actually do everybody good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I choose not to talk like I was in the Marine Corps or anything like that, because that's not my way. But you know something? Sure good to hear it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I take that in an educational way. You're going to have to accept that person standing on either side of you, whether they're conservative, whether they're liberal, or whatever. You know, they're from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have
exactly.
to learn to work with that person and listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might be your commanding officer. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And just because your feelings are hurt, well, la-di-da. Welcome to reality.
A lot of times in the military, in fact, what they usually do is they'll tear a person down, and then they rebuild them into a team. You know, that's what they do as a rule. They aren't going to care about hurting your feelings. when you go in there, because, like I said, that's a purpose. They want to tear you down as an individual and then build you up as a team, because you got to all work together. You know, I had a guy who served in the military, and that's a purpose why they do that. You know, and it tests people. It tests your strength too. You know, because when you go into war, you aren't going to get a can of Play-Doh when you get into a war. It's a life or death situation then. You know, so.
Mhm. I mean, when you're in a boat, you know, 1,000 miles offshore, in 80 to 100 foot seas, you better darn well obey your captain.
Mm-hmm.
And you're gonna be putting your life's gonna be on the line, and you're gonna have to depend on the rest of the crew. Keep you from dying.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, you know, you have to work together as a team to keep a boat afloat. You know, it's, and believe me, there's no timeouts. Timeout means death.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, these kids are shown, welcome to reality. You know, this is no Play-Doh time, no timeouts, no political correctness in what people say. They're going to call you every name in the book. Top cookies. That's the way it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Jesus understood that. And he speaks about it in the Bible. That you're going to have to do things that are not necessarily going to go along with, you know, with how you feel inside. And it's right, and it's not a sin. And so maybe we'll have to take those conscripts and turn them into draft cards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, take them out of college and throw them into the Army or Marine Corps. And get the damn political correctness out of the way.
Well,
teach people. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, political correctness has no purpose in the military anyway. That's not the place for social experiments. You know, that's the worst place to try them. And, you know, because there's, like I said, with the military, it's do or die situations, and you can't have PC there, you know. That's the thing. You know, look at how it's screwing up the country right now, political correctness. Well, you can imagine it's going to be 100 times worse than the military. It's a whole different ball game there. You know, because like I said, it's do or die. You know, it's what it is. It's life or death situations in the military. That's what they train you for, to stay alive. They even do that somewhat in law enforcement, too, when I went through training there. But it isn't near as aggressive as it is in the military. But they don't want you getting killed. That's their purpose. That's why they are so rough and so not politically correct with you. They aren't going to give you Play-Doh, but it's the reason why is because they don't want you getting killed. Because the enemy don't care. The enemy kills with no feelings at all. You know, that's why they want you to be aggressive. You know, that's why even the politics, you know, shouldn't belong in the military. The military should be able to, you know, the people who run it, got to train their troops not to sit there and, I mean, you know, like I said, you don't have to wait till the enemy shoots at you. If the enemy is showing signs of aggression, you can use deadly force. It's a little different in law enforcement. You don't have to wait till they, you know, point a gun. If you wait till they point a gun, it's too darn late. See, you have to shoot first, prevent that from happening. There's more preventive action is what you need to do there instead of, you know, and we're being taught in the military, and this started with Vietnam, maybe even before, but in Vietnam, you'd have to wait till they take a shot at you. Well, then somebody dies, see? So you got to use preventative force. So you got to sometimes shoot. Might look like murder, maybe, but it isn't. You know, even if the enemy's running away, you can shoot them. You know, it's not the same as law enforcement, because law enforcement, usually when they run away, unless it's special circumstances, you cannot shoot. But the military, unless they unconditionally surrender, that means they give up everything. We control everything you do, and we do not torture prisoners. They unconditionally surrender. We can use deadly force on them. War, that's what you got to do to win. You got to kill the bad guys. I know that sounds terrible, but that's how you win a war. Am I right, Dan?
Yeah. And there's going to be collateral damage. And that's another sad fact of war. War is not clean. It's not sanitized. Innocent people are going to die. And that's just part of the game. And is it good? No. Do you try to avoid it? Yes. Can you? No. I mean, and when you go out there, and this is why what I like about President Trump, he found the toughest general, ex-general, I should say, that he could. And he put him in charge of the entire military. And they turned around and they removed the rules of engagement. So now they can do what they're supposed to do. If you're going to fight a war, you see a bad guy running across the street with an RPG or an AK-47, guess what? Your target.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. No. Yeah, if you had to use the former rules, what liberals did, you know, stand down and stuff, well, we see what happens, you know. Sadly, we see with Hillary Clinton, with Benghazi and stuff, and Extortion 17, they were told to stand down. Guess what happens? You give the enemy the advantage. That's not how you win a war, that's how you lose a war. So.
Exactly, because the enemy don't care. The enemy doesn't believe in rules of engagement. Most of them don't believe in the Geneva Convention. So you do what you got to do.
Exactly. And with the enemy, we don't do this, but the enemy, they'll have little kids, you know, young boys and probably young girls teaching them to shoot at us. And, of course, it's psychological because, you know, nobody wants to shoot a kid, you know. But they're shooting at you. You got no choice. You got to shoot back because, you know, they're launching real bullets. They're not toy guns, you know. So you got to act the same way you would with an adult. If a kid's shooting at you, they're going to have to take them down. You know, I know that sounds horrible, but, you know, that's what they do. It's a psychological thing that the enemy uses against us, see. They do anything they can, or they put up, like enemies, as targets. So we have to shoot through, or not enemies, but to put up kids as targets. So we have to end up shooting through the kids or innocent people, civilians, you know, to shoot
right
through them to get to the enemy. I mean, that's the tricks they use. We don't do those tactics. We won't. And I agree, we shouldn't. We don't do that stuff because we don't want to shoot an innocent person. But the enemy will take their own citizens, this is what tyrants do, and sacrifice them, see? At the hands of us, you know. They want us to do the shooting. Now they see American soldiers are torturing our innocent. That's not true, but that they put us in those positions, so we have no choice, you know. Human shields, right.
Yeah. And, you know, they put them in front of artillery and missiles. Well, guess what? You still got to take that missile out. Because, you know, that missile's going to kill one of ours. And are those children going to die? Yes. Do we want them to die? No. But, you know, there are times when you're left. the worst of two evils, you know? And you got to do what you got to do. I mean, this is what war teaches you. And sometimes you have to do something you don't want to do. Oftentimes, actually. But if it's for the best of everybody, then you do it. For, you know, for the good of all. And that oftentimes means doing things you don't want to do. You know, things that will probably haunt you for the rest of your life. But welcome to life. You know, it's it's not, everything in life is not rosy, and you know, we aren't bouncing around carrying our flowers, and everything's politically correct, and. Now, and these socialist ideals are stupid. Margaret Thatcher put it best. The only thing bad about socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money.
Exactly. And goodbye economy. The economy crashes when that happens.
Exactly. And then, you know, communism is one step worse. And now you got a tyrannical dictator telling you that.
Yep. Then they rule with an iron fist. Then you got no choice. No choice whatsoever. And with a tyrannical dictator, well, by that time your guns are all gone. They'll still have the guns, and guess what they do? They'll misuse the guns. The ones that misuse the guns are most are the criminals and governments. When the law-abiding cannot have guns, they're the ones, they commit the crimes with them, you know, but who do we go to then? There's no recourse. When the government does it, there's no recourse. Who are you going to go after? Who can you sue? No one. See? Because law enforcement's going to be taken over. Everything will be taken over. You know?
Exactly. And you're left with nothing.
Exactly. In fact, our lives will be in danger. I don't want to live like that. I mean, that's when we go over to Iraq. That's what our soldiers do. They teach them that you have nothing to fear. We're going to teach you to, survive on your own, to be able to defend your families, to be able to care for your families, and you don't have to worry about getting shot by a tyrannical government. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I like to see all dictators taken down. I cannot stand dictators. They're murderers. You know, there's no such thing as a good dictator, you know, because dictators have to rule. They have to use brute force to enforce their ideals. And that's what's so dangerous. You know, so, you know.
Oh, I agree. And not always the best thing to do. And but you do what you got. I mean, as I said, right now we can't force our beliefs. You know, that's also people got to make their own decisions. That's part of what God tells us. But in a case like Iraq, they have nothing to make a decision with. Because the evil will take over. And that's where God says, okay, you got to do what you got to do. And the only way we can guarantee that these people will have a chance without being killed in the streets, without worrying about walking on an IED, is to have us there, and we aren't going to be running like a tyrant like Putin. Or we aren't going to have these crazy, whatever they call emails, telling you it's fine to kill your daughter or stone somebody to death.
And when they kill your daughter, they'll make the family look at that, you know, watch it. Why they rape your daughter or rape your wife, you know, they'll make them look at it. They, you know, I mean, this is how cruel they are, you know. And they do that for a purpose, to melt you down, to break you down, you know. And but we got,
right.
You know, both you and I, Dan, we got the American spirit. We're never going to let them do that with us. I mean, we'll fight back. We'll fight to the death. And, you know, I'm not going to ever surrender. I'd see that happen. They're going to see the Second Amendment used, you know.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, so. I got 500 rounds. I wish I had a few more clips. But I could teach Barb how to load clips pretty quick.
Well, I'm glad we have that Second Amendment, because, like I said, when you hear a politician talking about gun control, they're not talking. They don't care about crime. Do you think they give a wits about crime? Give a wit about crime? They don't. It's because they want to overpower us. You know, I mean, if they cared
right.
about crime, there's an easy solution to it. They just don't want to have that solution, and that's basically is well, Jan Morgan pointed it out too. Keep these people in jail. They're that dangerous. They shouldn't ever be released. But they won't do that, because then they try to break us down. What they try to do is make us feel guilty. Well, you know, they really didn't mean it, you know, and we can't lock them up in a cage like we do an animal. And that's why they talk, see? And they let them go, and then, of course, they say they can't have guns, but we know very well they can get a gun when they want them. You know, I mean, if that dangerous, you and I believe, you know, that they should be in prison for the rest of their life, and they could not hurt anybody. I don't believe in this parole system. I'm sorry. If somebody commits murder, why should they get parole? You know, maybe it sounds harsh, but I'm sorry. I believe that, you know. So.
Oh, yeah. They're cold enough to do that. Then guess
mm-hmm.
what? I'm cold enough to put them in the jail and throw away the key.
Mm-hmm. That's where gun control works, right there, is in the jail, because they don't get access to guns in there, you know. You know. So.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with locking a person up. They want to act like an animal, they can be treated like an animal. I mean,
exactly.
You know, these people who kill, they do so without a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you or I were ever forced into that position, would we hesitate? No. Would it haunt us?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and if we ever get forced in that position, Dan, then they try to make us look like we're the ones that are the bad guys. You know, that's what that's the way it's become now. If you actually acted in self-defense and you saved the lives of your family and yourself, they turn around and make it look like you murdered that guy. And that's not true, but that's what they try to do. See, I know the left. They hate the America so bad, so much, that everything that we stand for, they try to destroy. But yet they promote perversions, but you know what I mean? The freedoms they promote are reckless. But that's exactly
right.
What it is. And like I said, it's kind of similar to these other countries like Iraq. That's where it's led to, because I can guarantee you, in Iraq, I mean, the citizens don't have guns there. I can promise you that. Why would a government allow citizens to have guns when the government wants to control them completely? You can't control them if you have guns. See, so they don't have guns there.
Right.
And, you know, they're lied to, like we've been lied to by people like Hillary, saying if we give up our guns, we're safer. Well, I'm sitting there laughing at Hillary. Even it would be funny if it wouldn't be so scary. But it's actually,
wow.
they're worried about our power. They don't like us to have any power. And the other thing is high taxation. Same thing. They take away your wealth, you don't have any power. See? And that's the point. Then we're at the mercy of the government. I don't want to be at the mercy of a government. That's not freedom. That's tyranny.
Exactly. And like the other day, it happened Wednesday, a guy had his estranged wife, her arms tied behind her back, and she was screaming for help as he was thrown in the car. And I'm thinking to myself, if I had an open shot to get him, I'd go for it. If I didn't, I'd start shooting at that engine. You know, putting holes in the radiator, hoping I hit something vital. Making sure the car
Even aim for the tire, you know, pop that out. You know, 'cause that'll shorten the distance, you know.
Well, definitely slow them down. And in my second clip is Full Metal Jacket, so a little more punch to them. And, you know, I might be able to crack the block, I don't know. Because I'd be moving forward. You know, the closer you get, the more power you got. And,
exactly.
You know, that woman could have been saved.
Exactly.
Just by, I may not be able to take out the criminal. I'd be yelling for somebody else to call 911. But if I didn't have a clear shot to the criminal, I do got clear shots to the car. And I know where the engine is.
Oh, yeah. Not hard to find. You can actually imagine it right where it's at there, and you're pretty close to it, you know. And that's actually where a 30-06 would come in handy, because that will definitely wreck the block, you know.
Right. A 45 is a little weak on that, but, you know, you're close enough.
I shot an engine block with a 44 mag and a 357 mag. Neither one did nothing to the block. It just left a little speck on the block. It didn't crack it or nothing. So, you know, that's pretty hard stuff, that cast iron. Unless it's aluminum, maybe aluminum would crack easier. But
no,
I know
but
I couldn't crack a cast
the,
iron one with it. So
you can take out the fuel injection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like the oil pan. Hit that. That'll go through that, and then it'll leak out the oil. The engine will seize up then.
The radiator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's still a bunch of things you can aim for that you can take out, you know. A lucky shot might be able to hit the oil filter.
Mm-hmm. That pump the oil all out. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know, you might be able to hit the fan, the fan belt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hit the if you take out the timing belt, car's dead.
Yep, stops right there.
Right, and there's only plastic surrounding that. So, if you aim for the front of the engine, you have a good chance of hitting something good.
And, yeah, the cover, like the covers to them, like even the cover to the timing chain, that's just thin. That's a thin metal like the oil pan. And that you can punch a hole in that. That'll pump out the oil. You probably won't turn going to do anything to the timing chain or the sprocket because that's hard. But you'll get the oil out of it. And like I said, the crankshaft doesn't go very long without oil. I mean, it'll lock up on you pretty quick. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking a few hundred yards. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It won't take long, you know, and before things start overheating real quick, and then they seize, and once that happens, you ain't going any further.
You're done, yep.
So, and that's the way I look at it, is that, you know, if you can't see them and get a good shot in, or like, you know, in this case, he threw her in the back seat right behind them. So you couldn't take a shot through the window and hope to hit them, because if it missed him, it could very easily go into her. It's a dangerous shot.
And
so,
plus, glass can throw the bullet off too, so it can go into an unpredicted tangent, you know.
Right. That's why I was
don't know where it's going to go.
The best thing to do, the radiator would eventually cause an overheat. And then aiming for the front of the engine, you can perforate something to get the oil to come out. Mm-hmm. I mean,
exactly. Like I said, those covers are just thin metal.
Right, and then you know, save two rounds for the tires.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the tires will keep just going slow. And then you got, you know, the rounds that hit the engine are going to, eventually cause mortal damage to the engine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the best decision in the world, but,
nothing else you can actually shoot at as far as the drivetrain that would stop it right away. The drive shaft is pretty hard. I mean, it's pretty small to hit that. You know, you'd have to be you wouldn't be able, especially when you're moving, you're not going to hit it because you don't have far to lead and stuff. And, of course, the differential is cast iron. That's not going to do a thing to that, you know. It may won't even puncture
your
that.
Your engine's your best
engine
thing.
Your engine is your best choice. And that's probably not 100% guaranteed either, but it's, your places on there are weak that, you know, I mean, a bullet can perforate real easy, so.
Right, that's why I didn't bring the engine. You know, if the car's coming at you, you just start shooting at the engine and hoping you'll go through the plastic in the front of it so you know you'll hit the engine and just pray that you got a lucky shot. You know, you got 8 to 10 rounds and just pull them off one after another and just keep on aiming for the grill area and keep your fingers crossed.
Plus, keep plenty of ammo, you know. If you have more magazines, keep more, you know, magazines, you know. Just,
yeah,
you know, you want plenty
carry
for that.
I have one full one in my gun at all times, and on my holster belt, I have another area for another one. So I have two full clips. That's 16 shots. Hopefully I can do it in that, and if I can't, well, give me E for effort. You know? And then hopefully you'll be able to look at the front of the engine afterwards to see what you did.
Or you could look at the ground and, you know, and see what's coming out of it, you know. You know.
Well, I mean, stuff starting to come out of it, especially dark stuff. Good.
Mm-hmm. If it's black, you know it's oil, so.
Right, so, I mean, and if nothing else, well, you know you're going to hit the radiator. So it's going to be leaking either green stuff or black stuff, or better yet, both stuffs.
Then the so-called leave a blood trail. I always call it a blood trail. I mean, the car will kind of like, you know, you'll see it where it goes, and you'll just keep following that, and you'll find the car stalled, you know, sooner or later.
Eventually.
It might go a ways, though, but it's going to go a little ways, but, you know.
Well, it gives the police something to follow.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, so, as I said, it's not the best way of dealing with it, but I wouldn't risk a shot at the guy, you know.
No.
But I couldn't.
You might have the environmentalist complaining, oh, he's polluting, you know.
No, probably. EPA would probably
you know
give
them.
A ticket.
EPA comes out, yeah.
Those morons, I mean.
Yep.
It's like, you know it's a kidnapping. You're going to do everything you can to stop it. And that's it. I mean, part of owning a gun is knowing what the best options are. And being able to decide. And as I said, I wouldn't take a shot where I'd be at a good chance of possibly injuring or killing the hostage.
Mm-hmm.
So you,
exactly. You don't want to. It's, yeah, you don't want to have anybody dying from friendly fire, they call it, you know.
Right.
So,
but you know that the bullet ain't going to go all the way through the engine.
Oh, no.
It's going to stop. I mean,
no. Well, if you have a gun that powerful, I mean, you probably need like a 50 or something to do that, but then that's also a hazard to anything beyond the engine, too, because those bullets keep going and they will do damage to anything, even if after it penetrated there, you know, who knows where they go. You know, you have to have a lot of media to stop one of them. Although I did stop one, but they don't stop too easy, you know.
No, 50 has a lot of oomph to it. But when you're going into Walmart, I doubt you're going to be carrying a 50. Or
no, I think people would know that.
It'd be a little obvious.
Oh, I'll tell you though, I they're fun to shoot. I got some trees out here, and for the heck of it, I just took one out and shot it into a tree to see what it went through. It went through about 4 foot of a cottonwood tree. I had a tracer, and it went about 100 feet up in the air and dropped down into the field, and I just marked it. I got the bullet in my collection now, so I found the bullet, and that's rare to find that, you know. But so they go through a lot, you know. So.
Oh, yeah,
anyway.
Well, a tracer round, because it has the magnesium, it's going to burn, leave a burn mark, so you have something to look for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A normal round, the Lord knows where it goes, you know, especially a 50.
Yeah,
you know,
like I said, it can be stopped. I did get one stopped last spring there. I took it out and I shot into it was even a thicker tree, and that one stopped it. So it's in the tree someplace. I bet it wasn't too far from going all the way through, but it went through. It was stopped finally. So they can be stopped. It just takes a lot more stuff to stop them. So.
Right. Well, I don't know if our partners are coming on.
Well,
so.
Well, look here. I'm going to look at the
after
11. Studio with after 11? Okay. Yeah. I got 10 o'clock here. Let me look here. Okay. Well, it was just us two on the studio. Okay.
Right.
I'll look into the private. Okay. Jennifer, I'm dealing with something important beyond soon. So Jennifer just wrote that one. Did she write that? It doesn't say what time. But anyway, she said she'll be on soon. So.
Okay, I guess we can hold out.
Yeah. Well, I can be on as long as you can. You know, if she comes on or something, you got enough, I may decide to retire and go to bed. But, you know.
Yeah, I just got to fill up my drink thing because my voice is going. So, but yeah, you get stuck in situations like that. I mean, you don't do what they do in the movies.
Oh,
you know?
For sure.
I mean, in the movies, it's not always the happy endings where, you know, you take two shots, yeah, take the bad guy out.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're talking about trying to go through, you know, a windshield. You don't know how much deflection is going to be. I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's not even a. I know you can't even say it's a science because, you know, it's unpredictable. The glass could have different. Let's just say it's not exactly uniform when it comes to tensile strength. Everything, it can be a little variations on it, maybe a little weak spot in the glass, and that could throw it off. I mean, it doesn't take much to throw it off. It's hard to define it. That's the point. It's unpredictable. And, you know, that's why I don't, you know, recommend shooting through glass because it could go especially windshield, because usually a windshield will deflect it down just because of the shape of the glass, but we don't know how much it will deflect it down. See, it could end up missing the person, your target, or it could end up hitting an innocent person behind, or, you know, or to the side, you know.
Well, yeah, because you don't know if you're going to be hitting it directly on. You know, is it going to be head on or what?
Exactly.
You know, if you're off by, you know, the car's off to an angle, it's going to deflect outward away from your target. You know, so you don't know. There's too many variations, too many variables to take a chance. So you opt for something that's doesn't really matter about the variables. You know you can hit the engine somewhere.
Like I said, you were talking about the movies, like Dirty Harry, where he shoots through the windshield. Like I said, it's unpredictable, and in real life it's unpredictable. But it works great in the movies, though. I mean, you know, it makes good for a movie scene, you know. But other than that, I mean, there's no way you can predict it, you know. So.
Well, you see these guys in the movie now holding the gun sideways. Well, I don't know. How are you going to shoot a gun sideways?
Yeah, you know what that happens? The bullet's not going to go at the target because gravity will take effect and it'll throw it off to the side. The recoil throws it too, you know.
Exactly.
So you're going to have a bullet going way off, you know.
It's going to go wherever it darn well pleases.
Exactly. But it looks cool for the movie, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were doing that for a while, and I'm sitting there looking and going, yeah, right. I mean, it's like, yeah, I wouldn't even do that in a range. We got to be afraid of hurting somebody.
Exactly. And plus, if you hold it one way, it might even jam on you, you know, because it's not designed to shoot that way, you know.
Right. Who the heck knows? I mean, I have no idea. Nor do I plan to find out. I mean, I mean, it's.
I even saw in one movie they fired a gun underwater. You know, I mean, I've heard of people doing it in real life where they shoot guns underwater, but that's a dangerous thing to do. You know, but they show it in the movie like it's no big deal. You know. But when you shoot them underwater, I mean, you can blow the bolt right out of it. And if it was a .45, you'd probably take the slide out because the pressure is much higher, you know.
Well, I know a bullet doesn't travel with beans underwater either.
No.
They even shot a .30-06 into a pool, and it went down less than 4 feet.
Yeah, it's like hitting a brick wall, you know.
Right. I mean,
I would never take a gun and stick it in water and try to fire it with water, you know, water in the barrel and everything. That was really, that's hard. If it doesn't blow the gun up, it can't tell me that's good on the gun. That's got to harm the gun or wear it out in a hurry because that's, you know, it's not designed to be fired underwater, you know.
Use a scare gun for that.
There you go.
You know, you probably do pretty well with a crossbow, too, but either way, you aren't even going to go very far with them either.
No,
you got too
they
much
slow down
drag
real quick.
On the arrow.
Yeah, the water.
You know, spear gun.
It's different.
A spear gun only works about 10 feet. It doesn't go long. You know, the movies, as I said, are a bunch of hogwash. The way they shoot guns. I mean, Dirty Harry, even with a .44. I mean, those things are mini cannons. But, it's still, you know, still going to be affected by physics.
Exactly.
If it's a window, it's going to deflect a little. how much? Mm-hmm. Lord knows.
Even the 50 caliber EMG, a 50 caliber EMG is affected by hitting glass like that. It can throw it off. Doesn't take much to do it either. You know?
No. I mean, why do you think in World War II, why do you think you fired so many rounds into the other plane? Because you don't know where everything's going to go.
you're just hoping for luck to take over, you know.
Right. If you hit towards the front, you're likely to hit the engine, then you're all set. Because then you're going to destroy the block. And if you hit the cockpit, all depends on... Then it goes into luck. And anything behind that is pure luck.
Well, just hitting it is lucky, you know, because you have to lead it, you know, kind of like you lead geese with a shotgun. You're going to have to lead it, and that's, who knows where that, you know, how high it is, the altitude and stuff, and how far you got to lead the head, because the bullet will kind of curve, you know, when you fire. You got to follow through.
Know.
I mean, that's why they usually use, I mean, a 50 caliber hitting a plane, like a jet or anything, you know, it's about as, you about have about the same chance of hitting it as you would do find a needle in a haystack. It's practically impossible. That's why they have heat-seeking missiles, because guns like that just aren't effective that way.
You know, World War II, they used 650s, three on each wing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, ace was considered five kills. And, you know, when you think of it, you're turning at 300 miles an hour. When you fire that round, it's going back. I mean, because it's going to be where you used to be. And 300 miles an hour means it's a couple hundred feet behind you before you even know it.
Exactly.
And knowing how much to lead at that speed is pretty impressive. And you can't sit down there and just hold the trigger down and you ain't gonna have any ammunition.
Yeah, so. It never works in real life, you know. So it just doesn't, you know.
No,
I mean,
so
there's lots of people. But.
Well, it, people, Baron von Richthofen had 91 kills. By the time he got killed. Pappy Boyington had 18 confirmed. So, I mean, there are people who know how to do it. But I know I couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
Well, moving targets, I couldn't hit anything. A stationary target I can hit well with a 50 or probably any gun, but anything moving, it's... you know, it's pretty hard to do, you know. I've never been good at moving targets.
Well, it's when you're going deer hunting and you're looking for something that's just standing there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the bullet hits before the sound does.
Well, the thing is, about an animal compared to a plane, an animal's not really moving compared to what a big plane is doing, you know. A deer, you know, as a rule, you don't really have to lead them very much, you know, because that bullet's there so fast that you probably lead them 3 inches and you're got it right in the right spot there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've hit them on the run like that until they get out there too far, but then I don't shoot either, but they're up close.
Oh, yeah.
I've hit them on the run, you know.
Well, once they get past 200 yards on a run, you don't bother because they can turn. And do quick and
you end up wounding them.
Right. You know, and I don't like doing that. You know.
Me either.
Nothing worse than having to track an animal. And you know, I've only had to do that a couple of times and I felt miserable. Because then they end up bleeding to death. You know. And that means a painful death. So
mm-hmm.
You know, I want to make sure it's going to be clean, the critter goes down quick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, preferably within 100 yards. We
mm-hmm.
guarantee.
Yeah, if you get a good heart-lung shot, they're not going to go too far, you know.
No, and it ain't going to hurt too much.
No, they probably don't even feel it, you know.
Yeah, the adrenaline starts pumping, and then they're gone. And, you know, that's the...
kind of like hitting that oil filter on the car.
Right.
You know?
It'll go for a little while, but not very far.
Not very far. I mean, I compare it to that because it's similar, you know.
Well, you bring an oil filter. How long did it take to pump a whole, you know, all the oil out? Not long.
No.
And then you're talking only a matter of less than a couple hundred yards before
mm-hmm.
no more car.
And if the animal's adrenaline charge, you know, kind of compare it to an engine, if they're pumping, racing that engine faster, that's going to even pump it out quicker, you know.
Exactly. Which is, what a bad guy would do. And try
mm-hmm.
to speed away, and then kaboom.
It'll just stop right there.
Oh, yeah. I had a timing belt break once.
Mm-hmm.
And when it goes, it makes a big boom, and
mm-hmm.
it's over. You know. I had to put the clutch in, let it roll.
Yeah, when your timing belt goes, she's done. You know, she's done. She just stops right there. Doesn't even pop or anything.
And, well, it does pop, make the big bang.
What did?
Oh, yeah, because the piston ran into the valve.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It stopped immediately. And it hit the valve.
Well, the valve didn't clear
the
head, piston then.
Right. Cracked the head. And then when it did that, it broke the connecting rod, too. So.
Well, and that's serious, then. I mean, it's not a situation of just replacing the belt, then. I mean, that did some internal damage. That means a major overhaul.
In 1982, the car was... less than 6 months old. It was just when they told you to change the timing belt. And
mm-hmm.
what the designers did is they designed it wrong. I had just changed the timing belt. And then the oil pump went, and it pumped oil into the housing of the timing belt, and the oil ate the... ate the belt and
started to slip.
It ate it and broke.
Oh, wow.
And $2,300 in damage back in 1982. So
that's a lot of money.
Basically, I blew the engine. I mean.
You have to replace the engine. Really, you can't repair them, really, you know.
Not when you do that much damage.
Yeah,
I mean,
might even twist it, might even warp the block a little bit, you know. Because that had to be a slam on that crankshaft, too.
Oh, yeah.
So.
That was a nasty kaboom. And that was like, you know, as I said, I heard this big cow... I was in third gear going onto a highway. So I had it up around, 4,500, 5,000 RPMs when I let go. And it was like, never heard a sound like that before in my life. Hope to never hear that again. Boy, that was nasty.
Wow.
It was like you know, and I pulled over and looked. There's a trail of oil, and it was like, he's dead.
Well, but did anything come out of the side of the block? I mean, you know.
I never really looked that hard. I just, it was like sunset when it happened. We had it towed away. It was a Mercury LN7. And brand new car, wasn't old. It had about 60,000 miles on it. You know, it was like
that's
a year old.
That's the problem when you know, when a person has a rubber timing belt or a steel chain, a hardened steel chain would never do that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can do a car available or pickup to have timing chains anymore. You know?
Yeah, the engines
are getting so small. The engines
are
getting so small and they're getting cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Costs more to make a timing chain and to put it on. So, you know, it's not like back in the old days where everything had a timing chain. And, you know, you never really had to worry about it.
No, exactly.
You know?
Or some of them just had gears, you know, meshed. You know, and then that was even better yet. But I've heard of them going out, too. You know.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
we had a pin. It was in a tractor. We had a pin come out. It was in the timing. It had two camshafts. It was a V8 engine on a tractor, but it had two camshafts, one in each set of four cylinders. And one of the pin came out and dropped into the gears and just took all the teeth off. It was one of those pins that was a poor design. It would run, but it only ran in four cylinders because the other one was sheared off, you know. But it just tore all the gears up. The sprockets are all tore up, and, you know. So, I mean, that's a thing, too. But that's a design, too, problem. It's not the engine, you know. It's just that they didn't, when they put pins in there, they don't necessarily, you know, hold up. So.
Well, a clevis pin will break. I mean, they will. I mean, that's a fact. And when they break, they're going to, they'll probably bounce around a little bit. And they end up put in the wrong place. You know, you're talking, all you need to take out is three teeth. So, you know, you don't need to be, you don't need very much. And then once that happens, forget it. I mean,
exactly.
Well, you see those things happen occasionally. We'll check with Jennifer one more time and see what the heck is going on.
Oh, you want me to check with her?
Yeah, find out.
Okay, I'll just stick her on mute here, then I'll see if I can get a hold of her.
Okay, and you know, otherwise we'll call it an end because I'm losing my voice.
Yeah, and I'm getting really sleepy here too. I'm losing my train of thought here. Okay, I'll see if I can get a hold of her here. All right.
Okay. And you know, President Trump is listening. You got to keep people there, and you got to send more, and you got to send more troops in because you have no choice. That's the only way we're going to end this mess in the Middle East, and if we can establish a true democracy in Iraq, there's a good chance we can get it to spread for the rest of the Middle East with us, between us and Israel. We can stabilize the whole place, bring them into the 20th century, and stop all this Sharia baloney. And you know, these honor killings and all that other nonsense. Best way to save your own honor is live a righteous life. And these people have to learn that it's not 2,500 years ago. It's today. And they got to bring it up. They don't have to give up their heritage. And they have to give up the violence. It never pays off. And if you want a trip to heaven, it doesn't mean you're going to turn around and kill people. And you're not going to get 71 virgins.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with 71 virgins anyway? You know.
Okay, well, I got a hold of Jennifer, Dan.
Uh-huh.
And I contacted Jennifer, and she says, I am dealing with a mess here. And it's, and the, or Scott saw it too, cause, and I said if not, I just said you're losing your voice, and we will wrap up early. And she said okay, so we can wrap up, I guess, anytime. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sorry people for an early show, but we got two people, two old timers,
and I'm getting tired.
Right, and past our bedtime, and. Both of our throats are going, so I think we're going to end up closing it early, and we'll let good old Red, somebody has to go wake him up, so I think I'll wake him up and let him go. Red, come on, wake up. There he goes. Red, are you there? Come on, wake up. I know you've been dead for 40 years.
Throw some cold water on him.
Well, I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to, this is true. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester. And it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may... May I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag. Our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God. Indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others, for all, which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?